Welcome to the quarterly audio series of the North & Shantz Consulting Group. We call this series Straightforward, and it's designed to provide you with direction for your future. In this edition, Roger welcomes his guest, Ann Byler. You probably know Ann as Auntie Ann, the founder of Auntie Ann's Incorporated, the company that makes delicious hand-rolled soft pretzels. Now from the North & Shantz Consulting Group, here's Roger North.
I've been thinking lately how much I love to hear stories. And fortunately, in the business I'm in, I get to hear a lot of stories. And I find them endlessly fascinating. I've also noticed that people that speak in public and do so successfully are very often, in fact, almost without exception, very good storytellers. And I started thinking about the types of stories that are especially compelling to us. And I think for the most part, we love to hear inspirational stories. And they become even more inspirational to us when barriers have been overcome or insurmountable hurdles have been jumped over. And my guest today, Ann Byler, many of you know her as Auntie Ann, has a wonderful inspirational story. And so it's a great privilege, Ann, for me to have you here today and to hear a little bit about your story. Welcome to Straightforward.
Thank you, Roger. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
Thanks so much. And for me, it would just be wonderful to, again, hear your story. I've heard it on a number of occasions, but each time it's a bit different. It would be great if you could just give us a little bit of history as to how Auntie Ann's pretzels started.
I've done this story, I don't know how many times, Roger, and every time I tell the story, I think, okay, now what part is it that people would like to hear about? But I have to say right from the start that my life has been overcoming one hurdle after another.
Mm-hmm.
And so it hasn't always been easy for me. Auntie Ann's actually started because of our own tragedy in our life many years ago. Mm. We have three daughters, and two of which are living, and our middle daughter was actually killed on a farm back in 1975. And it was out of that tragedy that my husband and I really suffered emotionally, spiritually, and we almost divorced a number of years after that. But it was because of marriage counseling that we actually were able to keep our marriage together. And of course, there are some more pieces to that. It's God and faith and support of people that loved us and
sure.
and really kept us together.
Mm-hmm.
But the real clincher came, Roger, when my husband, it was 7 years after our daughter was killed, he firmly suggested that we go see a marriage counselor. That was devastating for me because I thought that I could handle all of my own problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that was almost a defeat to think about going to somebody and asking them for help to get my life back together.
Oh, yes. But I'm wondering about the culture from which you came. Would getting help, marriage counseling in this case, have been something that would have been well accepted?
It was a bit unusual. It was back in 1982, and I honestly had never read a book about counseling or psychology or anything along those lines back 20, 25 years ago, nearly.
Sure.
And so, yes, my culture was always pretty much you make your own way.
Mm-hmm.
You help yourself, do the best you can with your life, and certainly don't go for counseling. I don't know if it was just our culture, but it was for sure back in that day.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of unusual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I felt like it was a sign of weakness to go get
wow.
help.
Yeah.
But Roger, I can really tell you that it's a sign of strength to admit that it's not okay, and I really need somebody to help me get through this. And so that was the beginning of our journey toward healing, which took a number of years, but was the best thing that happened to us and really, in fact, kept our marriage together. And I've always said it really kick-started something that was completely broken. I was 92 pounds, cried every day, very depressed, had no self-esteem, felt like life was over, like God would never use me again in the work of his kingdom. Okay, I'll be a mom and we'll have our family, but that was as good as it was going to be.
This is all there is.
This is all there is. Mm-hmm. And little did I know, wow, just saying all that makes me go back to think about how difficult those years were. So we've come from that to where we're at today, which is a life of peace in our home and not just existing together, but truly being husband and wife and having a family that I would say is fairly normal, what is normal nowadays, but we're happy and we're at peace and we communicate and it's a wonderful life after all.
And there was something in that experience of healing that made you and your husband Jonas want to share that experience with other people. And I believe, if I remember correctly, that was an impetus for the start of the business. Could you tie those factors together a little bit for us?
When our marriage started to function again, started to purr again, it was amazing to me And where once there was nothing but distance and walls and absolutely no communication, we started talking again and we started liking each other. Mm. And so it was the beginning of, oh, wow, maybe we can help other people get through their difficulties in marriage. And so it was out of that that my husband did some training with Dr. Richard D. Dobbins from Emerge Ministries out of Akron, Ohio. And he studied under him for a number of years. It was through that that we began to believe that we can save marriages. And I thought at that point I could save every marriage in the world. But I was wrong. But we feel like we've been able to accomplish that and have been able to help many people.
Now, Jonas's interest in that came almost completely out of your own experience.
Absolutely. And I never imagined that he would even want to study, because we both come from the Amish background and both of us had an eighth grade education. And so for Jonas to study was unheard of, because he was a mechanic. He can do anything from repairing a car to fixing my hair dryer if he needs to. So that's just what he did. But study? Sure. No. And he also has dyslexia. And so for him to start to study was very unusual. But it was intriguing for him. He started to understand psychology and human behavior and tried to understand, wow, there are certain reasons that people do certain things. And so he became very intrigued with psychology and human behavior. And to this day, he's still fascinated with it. But it was based out of that longing and desire to really understand my behavior, first of all, and what happened to our family. How could this happen? He had to understand. His studies began and he became fascinated and then completely passionate about helping other families to survive in their marriages.
And yet you really didn't have the means to take that anywhere at that point, correct?
No, financially we couldn't go anywhere. He was working at a body shop and making a little bit of money, but not much. And so that's when Auntie Anne started, and he was doing counseling a couple of days a week and studying a couple of days a week and working for his father one day a week. And obviously, we had at that time two teenagers and we needed some more money. So I said, well, honey, why don't I just go to work so we can put some groceries on the table? And he said, well, sounds like a good idea to me. So that's what I did. And that's where Auntie Anne's was born.
And you went and formed a market stand. Is that fair to say?
That's correct. I worked for someone else that had a farmer's market and he had soft pretzels. And then after 7 months of managing a store, we actually bought our own farmer's market store for $6,000, borrowed money from his father.
Sure.
And it was a leap of faith. $6,000 was a lot of money for us back in 1988. That's how Auntie Anne's was started. But I really believe, Roger, the reason that we've been successful, that Auntie Anne's went from one farmer's market store to almost 900 locations today, is the heart of my husband, who really cared about people. And he instilled that into my heart as well in time. And it's really about people. It was never about how much money we can make, but it was more about how much can we help people.
I read somewhere in your history, Anne, that the first pretzel you were selling at that market stand wasn't particularly special. Is that true?
Right. I come from a, like I mentioned earlier, an Amish background. There was eight kids, and I happened to be the baker and the cook, and I helped my mom in the kitchen all the time. And so I knew when I made a very good dish that I heard about it. If it wasn't good, I knew about it. So I had kind of that experience to really help me understand when there's a good product. And so I'd carry that with me into the soft pretzel store that we bought. And I knew that what we had was not good. It was okay, but it was certainly not something you would rave about. And I was satisfied with that. So I told my husband one Friday morning as we went to market together, I said, you know, I'm really tired of selling a pretzel that is inferior. Since we can't sell something that's really, really good, let's just give it up and sell pizza and ice cream, which we already had that on our menu.
That was already there. Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh. And so my husband said, well, hon, before you give it up, just let me try something. And so most people, although it's my name all over the place, it's my husband's idea about the recipe. And I give him so much credit for Auntie Anne's and the success of our company, the recipe, and where we've come. It's all really because of Jonas.
So he started playing with the recipe a little bit until it got something close to the taste that we're used to now?
That's right. Exactly. And
well,
he went to the store one morning when I was going to give it up. I said, let's just forget about pretzels. I was very disgusted and I couldn't do these pretzels anymore because they were not good. And he said, well, let me just go buy something at the store and let's see if this works. Well, the first tray out of the oven was unbelievable. And we smelled them, we tasted them, and we stood there looking at each other thinking, wow, this is really good. And you know, it's interesting today, Roger, when I go to store openings at all, which I haven't in a little while because we have since sold the company. But every time I would go to a store opening and I'd see a customer try our product for the very first time, it was still that same, oh my goodness, what is this? This is so good. So it's always kept that unusual freshness, and people are amazed how good the pretzel is.
So it's more than just taste, obviously. It's all the senses involved, and you felt that
immediately.
When you first brought that out of the oven, isn't it?
Immediately. And it was immediate response from our customers, too. Jonas and I decided that, well, we know what's going on here, but what about the customer? Are they going to notice from that moment on, people that would come up and get a pretzel before this, they'd take a bite of this pretzel and they'd look back at our store. And
they'd wonder if they were in the right place.
Yeah, and they would come back and say, what is this? And from that point on, we couldn't make the pretzels fast enough. So at some point, we got rid of our pizza and the ice cream. And that's where Auntie Anne's Soft Pretzels was born, because it was all we could really do to keep up with
the demand. It wasn't the worldwide marketing force that we know about now. It was really just a word of mouth sort of thing people started to get excited about how different and how good this was.
And I became passionate. You know, when you have something that you love, when you become passionate about something, you want everybody to experience it.
Sure.
And I became passionate about everybody that went past our store. I'd either call out to them or I would go out and give them a pretzel. I would give them whole pretzels because I knew they'd never tasted our pretzels. And so I would just give pretzels away, or I'd give them a piece of the pretzel or whatever. But that's where sampling was born then. And actually, sampling for Auntie Anne's today is the most successful marketing tool that we have.
Continues to be.
It continues to be that, yes.
Now, for many people, and I'm speaking business-wise now, going from one thing, in your case, one store, to anything more than that is almost insurmountable.
Mm-hmm.
How did that occur for you?
Well, it was insurmountable. I had one store. I was happy with it. I was excited. I was passionate. It was the first time in our life that we actually had a little bit of money in savings and it was a very exciting time.
A dream come true.
Dream come true. I was able to support my husband. He started to do 3 days of counseling and was doing it as a free service in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And people, word of mouth, they heard about Jonas Counseling. And so we had the best of both worlds. We were able to give back to our community and make money at the same time. We were supporting the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was beyond what we dreamed of. I mean, it's something that we wanted to do, but we didn't understand that Auntie Anne's could actually be the vehicle to support Jonas's vision. But that's what it became. So we were living out our dream, and the second location became available, and it was a real stretch for me because now I had to, instead of me being at my store, I had to be at the second location, which was at Harrisburg at another farmer's market, and I had to delegate to my sister. And I can't tell you how difficult that was. As good as she was, we were attached at the hip, and we did a lot of things very much the same, but I was still very skeptical and very anxious about delegating. I just was not comfortable with that.
You made an interesting comment there that you were very confident in your sister's ability, or that's my paraphrase
that's
of what
right.
you just said. And that reminds me that so many times this idea of delegating, of giving away some of the things that we were doing so that someone else can do them, is less a question of our confidence in the other person as it is more of a question of what is there for us now. Did you experience that at all?
Well, I certainly did. I trusted my sister and I knew that she would do a good job, but I wasn't necessarily completely confident in my own abilities to be able to manage two stores. Even though she was doing the physical part of it, I was still carrying the burden of making sure that it was profitable and being able to handle two stores. That was huge for me.
Sure.
And so
50 miles apart from each other or more?
We would call each other a couple of times a day. I would call her, actually, and see how she's doing. And the longer time went, the more experience I had with delegating, the more comfortable I became with it. And I realized, Roger, that she was not going to do everything exactly the way I would do it, but I started to actually see it working. And so delegating, it's very delicate.
I think sometimes a light goes on that there's another way to get to the point that we need to get to besides our own. But when we haven't walked it ourselves, it's a little bit uncomfortable watching it occur.
You're exactly right. It's scary. You know, anything that is unknown to me is scary. If I've never experienced it, it's scary.
Sure.
You build confidence, though, after you've experienced it, and you keep going down that path. Repetition makes you comfortable with almost anything.
Sure, it does.
And so week after week after week after month, I finally got comfortable with my sister managing my store at Downingtown, and we were profitable. I mean, it was making sense. We're still doing well financially, so obviously this works, and I did get comfortable with it.
Now, obviously, there's a huge story between two stores and 900 stores.
And how much time do we have, Roger?
But somewhere in there, the idea of franchising came about. How did that come into your life, and what did that feel like for you? I mean, that's even a lot different than one to two stores, I would think, because you're letting go of a whole lot of stuff at that point.
Auntie Anne's has been a letting go of one thing after another. It's been a constant for me. Nothing has been constant at Auntie Anne's. We had two stores in 1988. 1989, my husband and I built 8 or 9 stores. By the beginning of 1990, we had 12, 13 stores. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but it was just my husband and I. And I kept telling my husband, there's a couple of things I know. Number one, I want to make sure that we pay all of our bills as we go. I want to make sure that we put enough money back for taxes so that we don't get caught with a huge tax bill at the end of each year. And the third thing was, I want to make sure that we give at least 1/10 of all that we make. So those were the three things that we had prioritized for our small business at that time. And I kept telling my husband, I want to keep this simple. I really want to keep it simple. So we went to an attorney at some point in here at Lancaster, and we said, well, you know, we have all these people wanting to do Auntie Anne's. They want to use the name, and they want to use our recipes. So
people were coming to you and saying that they'd love to get involved with the product as well?
Yes. We kept saying, no, 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 we can't do this. Finally, one day, my husband said, you know, maybe God has a plan here. Maybe we should just let it happen. I said, well,
Get out of the way.
Get out of the way. Exactly. Well, how do you do that? But that's actually what we started to think, okay, what is it that God wants to do here? And we didn't see the whole picture. If we would have, I would have stopped immediately because it would have been too huge. But he took us a step at a time in this. And we went to this attorney in Lancaster and told him that we'd like to do some sort of an agreement other than verbal. We needed a written agreement for the people that were interested. And they were coming to us. We get phone calls every day
in our
kitchen.
Okay.
I have to apologize publicly now. I took the phone off the hook because I couldn't handle it all. And so we did that. But after we went to this attorney, and I remember sitting in his office, I said, you know, just write something simple up. It has to be simple because I don't want anything complicated.
You realize what was happening there. You were asking an attorney to do something simple.
Ooh, that's what, an oxymoron or something like that? And I understand about that better today than I did 18 years ago, let me tell you, because I do understand, attorneys and simplicity. But he did his best to trying to draw up an agreement that would satisfy Jonas and I. And I'm really going to tell off on myself, but at that point, I sat in his office and he came to me with a 15-page agreement. And I cried. I mean, what's what we do is we cry when things don't go our way. And I said, oh, that's too complicated. I said, and he said, well, listen, I'll try to make this more simple. So we went back a week or two later and he had an 11-page agreement. So it was still too complicated for me, but we took that because it was bare bones and we called it a license agreement.
Okay.
And then later on in that year, we went to a company called Francorp in Chicago. And we understood the complications of franchising and realized that we are, in fact, franchising. We now had about 35 locations open and running. And so we had to go from this 11-page agreement. I want
to
say like maybe 150, 200-page agreement. But by then, Roger, I had already given up the fact that this is going to be simple. I realized that what we were doing was very complicated, that franchising is very litigious, that there are many, many pieces to this that could fall apart at any moment. And I really started my journey of faith. And Auntie Anne's has been my faith walk, for sure. I've learned many, many lessons along the way. But I can tell you one thing. Anything is possible if you have faith in God, if you have people around you that believe in you, and you try to do the right thing. You're not always going to be perfect at that, but if that's your heart, with those three pieces, anything is truly possible.
And in addition to that, something that comes out of you just in meeting you is how focused on people you are, as opposed to maybe focused on tasks. I'm often tempted to just ask that simple question of leaders, are you more task-focused or are you more people-focused? The most common answer I get from that is, well, I'm more task-focused. I'm a get-it-done. I'm a results-oriented person, and that's done well for me. But over time, I'm learning that I need to be balanced in those two areas. It seems to me that you would consider yourself much more people-oriented and at some point had to decide what to do with all these tasks. Did you go through a period of time where you just couldn't do both and decided you had to do something about it? Was that part of this whole delegation story?
I think there was a moment when I understood that you need both of these pieces to be successful in business.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that my strength was people. Although I was very task-oriented, I grew up on the farm. There's a task in front of you. You have to do it and get it done today.
Mm-hmm.
But in the business, it was very easy for me to spend time with people and let somebody else do the task. And before I understood the importance of both of those pieces, I was frustrated. I was torn between people and tasks. How can I do both? I can't do both and do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my pastor come to me right in the middle of that, end of 1990. He really helped me understand. He looked at me and said, "So how are you doing?" And I said, "I'm not doing very well."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I cannot do this." We were about number 50 stores. And I said, Omar Beiler was his name. And I said, "Omar, I can't do this anymore."
Mm-hmm.
I just absolutely, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, I can't do this anymore. And he said, "What's your gift?" And I said, "My gift? I don't know what my gift is." And he said, "You don't know what your gift is?"
What a wonderful question.
And I was like 42 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "I'm 42, but I don't know what my gift is." And he said, "Well, I've known you since I'm 16. I know what your gift is."
Mm.
I said, "Oh, I can't wait to hear that. What is it?" And he said, "Your gift is inspiration,
mm-hmm.
inspiring other people.
Mm-hmm.
You can get up and talk to people, or you can stand in front of a crowd and speak." I said, "Oh, well, sure. I love to do that." He said, "Well, that's what your gift is. What you love to do is your gift."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. That was a defining moment for me, Roger, because from that point on, I understood that he helped me understand this,
mm-hmm.
that whatever I do, I need to look at the task or whatever I'm doing, look at it through the grid of, I love to be with people and inspire and motivate. So from that moment on, I looked at everything through that grid. So if I do this, is that motivating and inspiring, or can somebody else do this job? My task to define that became very clear to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. I need to inspire and motivate people, and somebody else needs to do the test, the delivery, work on the franchise agreement,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
make all the contacts.
The finances.
I mean, everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing to me, Roger. And from that moment on, I have to say, the burden of the business became lighter because now I was able to focus on my gift. And when you discover your gift, I honestly believe that you don't have to ever go to work another day in your life, because when you discover your gift, it's what you love to do, and that's what you should be doing.
And I have to believe that was a driver of your growth,
oh.
But it's so beautiful to hear you explain it as a personal epiphany and living out the reason God put you here on earth. The byproduct of that was this 900-store franchise, right?
Oh.
That was just a byproduct. That was never
totally.
Anything particularly intentional.
Totally. But see, what it helped me to do, Roger, is help me to understand, okay, it's all about people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now I can go visit the stores because that's really important. I can meet the employees, the interaction that I love. Oh, wow, I can do that and still the business will go on, and I can go meet the franchisees where they're at. I can go to the store openings. These are things that I love to do, and somebody else can take care of the financing. I really don't care about that. You can come and give me a report about it because I want to know, but don't put me behind the desk and make me look at numbers all day long.
Took energy out of you versus what puts energy into
completely.
You, right? That kind of
you
thing.
You said it perfectly. Exactly.
When did you start realizing that you are a leader? You know it now because people tell it to you over and over again, and they invite you to speak in leadership forums, and you do leadership recordings such as we're doing today. But I'm guessing that came kind of hard to you.
It still does. I understand what you're saying, and I know that I am, because of where Auntie Anne's has taken me. And maybe I'll resist that some is because mm-hmm. that, Roger, along with leadership, it's not about the perks and the salaries, but it's really about responsibility.
Mm.
And when I think about leadership, and when you tell me that I am, I know that I am, but there's something inside of me that doesn't like that, because I really fully understand my responsibility as a leader in my home, in my community, wherever I go. It means that people are looking to me. It means I am influencing.
Exactly.
Whether I like that or not, I am influencing wherever I go. And that's a heavy responsibility, which almost puts a knot in my stomach, even as I speak about it. Leadership, some people see it as, ooh, wow. I see it more as a responsibility toward God, toward my fellow man. And it's not about being perfect, But it is about understanding it's a responsibility.
And at some point, you realize that it's both a privilege and a burden at the same time. And that seems to be what you're experiencing.
You said it very well.
One of the things I think, Anne, that people admire, and you may not even know that they admire this about you, is that you chose to exit the day-to-day leadership of your company and, in fact, sell your company probably well before most people thought you would do that. What were some of the factors that influenced that decision?
In my travels, I've seen a lot of leadership, and I've seen how other people function as presidents of a company or as owners or whatever capacity that they were in, whether they owned and operated or were owners and had other people in leadership in their companies. I've also had the privilege of being involved in nonprofits on the boards and so on. So I've seen the owner wanting to let go, finding it very difficult, and the employees wanting to let go and finding it very, very difficult. So the biggest influence was actually a nonprofit organization that I was on the board. And I saw the 70-year-old founder who was there almost 40 years just agonize. I mean, completely agonize in wanting to let go and trying to find an executive director to take his place was to this day, 6 years later, they're still struggling. And I remember leaving that meeting as I sat on the board and watching him in tears, a wonderful man, and the struggles that were going on. And I told my husband, driving back on the turnpike, I said, honey, I am not going to be Auntie Anne when I'm 70 years old. I promise you, I'm not going to stay there that long. And that was the first time that I even thought about leaving. And it was a moment of almost scary. Where did that thought come from? But I knew it was truth. And my husband looked over at me and said, well, how old do you want to be? And I said, well, 70, no, 65, that's a stretch. 60, maybe. He said, well, hon, you're 52 or 53 at the time. That means in 7 years you want to be out of Auntie Anne's? And I said, well, you put it like that, I guess it means we better start right now.
You better start some planning.
So we deliberately started talking about it, thinking about it, and within a year we had succession planners on board, and it happened a whole lot quicker, obviously, than what we thought it would. Very difficult process, but something that I think every organization needs to seriously look at before it's way too late.
Well, you set a great example for that because you made a commitment at some point that was time-boundaried, brought in experts, and helped you go about doing it in a right way. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't emotional for you. How did you deal with the whole emotional disengagement piece? And is it fair to say that some days you're still dealing with it?
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, it's like having a baby. Which, are there any moms or dads around that at 16 or 17 or 18 want to see their kids leave for college? Sure, you work toward that and you know someday it's coming, but it's never easy. So today I'm very much at peace with it, but it was another piece of my journey that really required faith on my part in God. And as I thought about letting go, I wondered, what am I going to do? I mean, I'm Auntie Anne. Will they always see me as Auntie Anne, or will I? Is that going to go away? Because there's a piece.
Will I have an identity?
Exactly. I was completely enmeshed into that part of my life. I was Auntie Anne. So it was an emotional roller coaster for me. It was not easy, and it would have been much easier. It would have been much easier for me just to stay there and just to be Auntie Anne for the rest of my life.
Which is why I think it's such a courageous decision for someone to go.
Sure.
While they're still productive,
yes.
While they're still enjoying their work, and while the business is still enjoying the fruits of having them there as a leader. And yet at some point it becomes a plug rather than allowing the talents that you have there to flow through. And you're starting to see that, I'm sure, with the company as it continues to enjoy success, continues to expand.
Yes.
You have the Auntie Anne's Cafes now, which is a new generation of your company. And as you think about that, and as you move forward, and as you talked earlier, I was touched actually by how you talked earlier about the struggle you've had in thinking of yourself in terms of being a leader, as bearing that label. What are some small things that you've picked up on the way that you might like to leave with other leaders as they consider the possibility of life after, that is life after the business that they've been identified with for so long? What are a couple of things that you've worked with along the way to get you to that point?
I think Auntie Anne's has been an amazing journey for me. And along the way, I've picked up a lot of things that have brought me to the point where I'm at today. But I think that we have to believe as leaders that there will always be a place for us.
Good.
There will always be a place for us. But I also believe we always have to stretch ourselves And it's much easier to stay in a place of comfort than it is to put yourself in a place where you're completely uncomfortable. But I have to encourage the people out there that there are a lot of us that are now retiring. I shouldn't use the word retiring. I don't like that word. I can't believe I just used that. But actually, you're moving on into another phase of your life. I like to call it seasons in our life.
Sure.
And the next season of my life, all there right now, I cannot tell you exactly what it's going to be. But I am so excited because I know there is something that will completely fulfill me and affirm to me that selling the company was, in fact, the right thing to do. But we will never understand that if we stay right where we are and just stay in that place of comfort. It doesn't build character.
Right. And that comfort may be involved with doing things that other people believe are very, very difficult. But for us, it would be much more difficult and much more challenging to have to be without them and to face the next season of life with some degree of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And you're such a wonderful example of that. You've done that while you're still young and vibrant. And
thank you very much.
You're welcome. And you bring that vibrancy to other people and other places. And I just hope that everyone that's listening to Straightforward here today takes the opportunity to hear you tell your story even more broadly. You're a featured speaker at a number of different forums these days. And just to hear your story, probably the sixth or eighth time in my case, continues to be an inspiration. And I encourage people to take the opportunity to listen to other people's stories, to listen to the elements that are both familiar to you and challenging to you, and do as we did today in listening to Anne. Listen for the nuggets of wisdom that there are in other people's life journeys, because all of us have had barriers to overcome, all of us have had hardships of different types, and all of us have grown when we've gone past them. Anne, thanks so much for being here with us on Straightforward today, and everyone have a wonderful day.
As Anne shared with us, discovering her personal gifts of inspiration and motivation added a whole new level of joy and effectiveness to her leadership. North & Shantz wants to help you discover and develop your leadership gifts as well, and provide you with support and expertise as you improve your organizational life. We continue to provide direction for your future through sustained relationships. We identify issues by conducting assessments, provide assistance during organizational transitions, and develop leaders through coaching and accountability. Remember that you can listen to this edition of Straightforward online at www.northshantz.com. When you visit our website, you'll also discover more about the variety of services North & Shantz Consulting Group offers you. As always, thank you for listening to Straightforward.